You are now plugged into Action right. Features.
You ready for this? What number is this?
47?
47,
I think. We're almost to Nifty 50.
We almost are to Nifty 50. If we do what we're talking about doing, we'll have to take a break from it to do the 50th.
Yeah, we can't do these in a row.
What are we talking about doing, Mike?
Oh, I'm glad you asked.
This Action Features podcast.
I'm glad you asked, James. We're going to do a 6-part series. Not all in a row.
Not in a row. No.
6-part series.
Yeah.
Just want to pay tribute to the late George Lucas.
He passed away back in 1983.
George Lucas passed away.
No, I guess 89.
The last good year he had. But anyway, just realizing a few days ago that even though he did the prequels and messed up...
did the special editions and trashed.
And hasn't had a good track record in the past several years. He is responsible. He is responsible for two of the biggest, most beloved franchises and trilogies ever. So
one of my single most favorite films of all time.
Yeah, too. Mine too. Same one probably. It's Raiders.
Empire Strikes Back.
Raiders.
Well, and Raiders is great too. I love Raiders. I would agree with. I'd put them on the same level.
Empire Strikes Back is
they're both fantastic.
Yeah, they're both.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're doing George Lucas. Talking about Star World tonight.
There will be a lot of that. Mike and I rarely refer to Star Wars as Star Wars.
Never anymore.
We always call it a Star World.
I can't stop. I can't stop saying it.
I say it to my kids, and Blaze sometimes says a Star World now. Like, it's...
If I go to Star Wars websites, I just type in Star World.
Why isn't this working?
Why won't this come up?
I want this... Bring me to the official Star World site.
Yep.
Yeah. So we may say Star World a lot. But for this first episode, we're going to talk about a little bit, maybe just a little bit, about the stuff before Star World.
Just a tiny bit.
And then Star World A New Hope in this episode.
So first we have some business to take care of.
Yes.
A good friend of ours.
Great friend.
Oh.
I got an upgraded.
You upgraded.
I took it to the next level.
Well, okay. I set you up, you knocked it down.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
I set him up,
that's
you knocked him down.
Yep.
Okay.
That's what we do.
Great friend of ours and a co-worker, Mary Henderson, is...
Big fan of the show, too.
It's a big fan of the show.
Very supportive of the show.
I think we've mentioned her on here because she was secretly listening for a couple months, I think.
Yeah, for a while.
She was sneaking listens without anybody knowing. Anyway, she's leaving. She's moving to Canada.
Taking the next journey of her life, you know?
Yep.
Next step.
Moving to greener pastures.
Yep.
Colder pastures.
Hey.
Because
it's Canada.
You see what I'm saying?
I know what you mean.
But she's doing what she's got to do, which is admirable. Admirable Ackbar.
Yeah.
It's a trap. It's a trap.
That's a Star Wars.
It's not a trap, Mary.
No,
it's safe.
Not.
It's safe.
You're
there.
Good
you
to go.
You can go. Anyway, so we want to say so long and farewell, and we'll see you again, I'm sure.
Yeah, bid you a fond adieu.
Adieu.
We'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adios.
But good luck on your journey, and
good luck.
We're going to send her CD copies of each podcast
that's
episode.
That's right. She'll be the first subscriber.
The only person that's going to get CD copies of
physical
it.
Subscriber.
In the mail. Yep. Yeah. But we really appreciated her support of the show and how she's always excited about the show and us for going in to record the show and always wishes us good luck.
And she acts about it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's good.
Thank you for being a friend.
Yeah. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew, you would see the biggest gift would be from me, and the card attached would say, "Thank you for being a friend."
Yeah,
that's good.
And, yeah, that was
impromptu.
That was impromptu.
Yeah,
we didn't plan that.
I was watching the bars on this thing.
It was going too high.
It
was
red the entire time.
It was red all the time.
It was red the whole time.
I tried to stay back.
I didn't. I got right up on it.
You went for it.
I went for it. I wanted to make sure that I was louder than you.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, that shouldn't be hard.
One-upsmanship.
It shouldn't be hard.
Yeah.
Standard.
A little bit of one-upsmanship.
Okay.
So we'll miss you, Mary.
So.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
But enough of that Debbie Downers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll move on to what we came to talk about.
Yeah.
George Lucas. a young man back in 1979 decides...
Who actually...
I'm just kidding.
...looked a lot like Mike.
Really? You think George Lucas looked like me?
And the, remember that picture we had of him when he was young with no beard?
Yeah.
He was standing like a muscle car or something like that?
Yes.
And we were like, wow, that looks exactly like Mike.
I vaguely remember that.
It was eerie, dude. Huh. It looked exactly like you.
Well, from certain angles, some say it is so.
Yeah. And I don't know about that.
Which is funny because my dad, when he was young, looked exactly
like
Star World. He looked exactly like a Star World.
Whoa. Luke Star World?
Luke Star World from the movie. My dad looked exactly like Luke Skywalker, so I guess between him and I, we could start a movie franchise.
It's in your blood.
I've got the Force.
Yeah. You can do episode 7, the two of you together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we will. George Lucas, everybody, you guys all know the story. I mean, you know what happened. I'm just saying, he's responsible for so many things. Taking the High Adventure of the 30s and 40s serials. Space Adventures, Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers and whatnot. Did it at a time when that was not popular at all. That the Vietnam War was over and everything was super realistic and kind of dreary, and Star World just took a world by storm. It took a Star World by storm.
It turned a world into a Star World.
What amazes me about the early stories of George Lucas are the incredible amounts of, you call it luck, I guess, but with everything that he did, pretty much, I don't know much about THX 1138.
It's just a student film. It just showed that he had like a vision.
It looks good for a student film, I can tell you that, because I've seen clips and things, but I've never really watched it. But
I think he redid it.
Yeah.
He did it as a student film first, and then had Bobby Duvall, I think it
Robert Duvall,
in the...
Okay, well, that's the one I'm talking about. He had fortuitous events happen, and usually on the cusp of failure. American Graffiti was one of my favorite movies of all time, and I'm just talking about it for a second. But that started where he was. They were filming in a small town. They started filming. They were there like a short amount of time. I can't remember. And the town told them to leave. They had to leave.
Yeah.
Because they didn't like the busyness of it or whatever. So they had to go find another town real quick, film it there. They had it was a very small budget. Nobody would buy it anyway. Francis Ford Coppola, I think, helped them out with it.
Well, it started as a bet. I think it was Coppola. Maybe it was Coppola that bet him.
Coppola bet him.
He said, "I'll bet you can't do a fun
just
comedy.
A fun movie."
Yeah.
And George Lucas proved him wrong.
Yeah. So I can do that.
He said, "I can do that." Yeah. And he based it loosely on some of his experiences as a kid and drag racing and all that. And it just turned out it's one of my favorite movies. Like I said, a lot of fun. It holds up really well, even though we don't have that culture anymore of the cruising. We don't cruise much anymore. But it just holds up like something resonates. But anyway, back to his luck, you know, nobody wanted to touch that film. And even after the screening, the big company executives, Universal put it out, said they didn't want to have anything to do with it, and they barely advertised or anything. And Francis Ford Coppola, again, he said, if you don't want to buy it, I'll buy it and put it out, because he thought it was really good. And so they did, and that wound up being one of I think it's the best return of all time on any film, because they spent almost nothing on it, and it's still, you know, they're still making sales from Blu-rays and DVDs.
I don't think it gets enough credit. I don't think that film gets enough credit, or enough play nowadays.
Yeah.
I think more people should have seen American Graffiti. It should be in the same level, for a teen, a coming-of-age movie as, 16 Candles or Breakfast Club or something like that.
Without that movie.
It's a different time period, but it's still, a great coming-of-age story.
Yeah. I think it sets the standard for all the ones that you're talking about in the 80s.
Yeah, I think it 100% does.
And even the 90s films that were based on the 80s films are all really based on that. I can't think of, maybe it's just my lack of knowledge, but I can't think of a teen coming-of-age story. I know there's Rebel Without a Cause and things like that, but that's not...
But not like a feel-good...
Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah.
So George Lucas, he made money on that, and so he kind of lucked out there.
And then he used that success.
Right.
That's what convinced Alan Ladd Jr. to be willing to do Star Wars.
Right.
Was, you know, he didn't understand anything about Star Wars, but the fact that he had made this movie and it was so good, it convinced people to go, yeah, I'll take a chance on him.
Right.
because now he's proven that he can do something
exactly
that I enjoy, and yes. I'll trust the guy. I may not trust what's right. what he's saying in the script and the things he's talking about, the craziness, but I trust the guy.
It's my understanding, you know? he had a hard time selling Star World, too.
He did have a tough time selling a Star World.
He couldn't...
Alan Ladd, the reason he was willing to go and you know, back him on the Star World was because of American Graffiti, because all the other studios were saying...
Right.
Mm-mm. But he went to bat for him, because he's like, this guy's doing American right. Graffiti, he's a genius.
Sci-fi wasn't doing well.
Mm-mm.
And that's where he had Ralph McQuarrie do all the paintings and yep. stuff, not as an afterthought, but as a precursor to what would happen, because he needed to sell visually
something to sell
what was gonna what he had in mind. And so the Ralph McQuarrie paintings are really cool. All of his concept art awesome. is really cool,
even though a lot of them don't match, you know, what ends up being in the film. Yeah. I mean, he evolved more and more. They got tighter to the film. It got tighter and tighter. But those original concepts yeah. are so crazy and out there, and it was toned back from his yeah. original concept looks. It's partly, crazy that they were so out there and were able to sell it. You know,
yeah. Probably partly due to funds. But,
oh, I would, yeah.
But I like the fact that it didn't turn out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was a kid, the thing that I loved about A Star World was how real... I can't stop.
Yeah.
was how realistic it looked. Because it was mm-hmm. a space movie. I knew it was in space and everything wasn't chrome. Everything was real. It was
dirty. It had
dirt.
Used.
Yeah, it had dirt on it and... just look like old parts, everything. The Millennium Falcon, you know, just looks like a jumbled, just kind of a clunker. It's a cool ship now, and we all think, oh, it's an awesome ship design, and it is. But that's what set it apart from other sci-fi at the time, was that it just had a totally different feel to it.
Yeah, when you watch other sci-fi films, it just seems so out there. It doesn't seem like...
It's not relatable.
Exactly. Yeah, the fact that things were used and that there were dirty places and there was bars and there was,
right.
you know, all these different things in that film, it really just made it seem like you kind of checked into the fantasy element, because there was things there that you could identify with.
Right.
And then it became, okay, this isn't really a fantasy. And you're like, this could really be, you know, I relate to these characters.
Yeah.
And I think this is like a, you know, this feels like a real thing and not so much... You know, okay, there's a Wookiee standing right there, and they're on a spaceship and stuff like that, but there's dirt on it, it's been used, it's fallen apart, and
right.
all these different things that
I think
checked you in.
Part of what helped, and I take this for granted all the time, I never think about it, but I'm sure this was his intent, was in a galaxy far a long time ago.
You got it right this time.
In a galaxy yeah. far, far away. Yeah. It's a tale, it's an old story. It's a piece of history, even though it's not really, obviously, but... to sell it as a piece of history almost makes it believable, like, okay, this is something that happened. This is not a guess.
It's not the future.
It's not a guess at what's yeah. going to happen in the future or whatever. This is something that's happened, and it is in a galaxy far, far away. So how do we know that there weren't, you know, something like this didn't happen? I'm just saying. So it was a genius move to just, for that little detail,
yeah.
to make it that way. And I don't know. I don't know.
I know. I agree.
It was just,
I think it's a very, very smart idea. I'm gonna turn some pages in this book and just see what happens. We've got the Star Wars Chronicle and the Star World's Chronicle in front of us. This book on the Star World. Since we're not playing the movie in here or anything, we're in a different room than usual. And I'm just going through here. Let's see if we can get to
the ships.
R2-D2.
I think. And we'll talk about this. We'll talk about this more. But to look at the story of. This movie being made. Star Wars is not my favorite of the three.
It's my least favorite.
It's my least favorite of the three, honestly. But to look at how everything was done and the obstacles that they had to overcome, I mean, George Lucas he filmed the whole movie and got the cut back and said it was basically garbage.
It was horrible.
It was unwatchable. And so to take a movie that had already been cut and filmed that is no good and tweak it and do some good editing, some fancy editing. I guess the bar scene, for example, where Obi-Wan cuts off the arm,
yeah.
was nothing spectacular at all. But because of the quick cuts, it looks like there's a lot of action going on when that happens. But
not enough credit is given in many of those documentaries because of what had happened with his relationship. But his wife, Marsha Lucas, was a huge part of that, of making the edit into something that worked and actually doing a lot of the story ideas. Like, it was her suggestion that Ben Kenobi get killed off because he had no idea what he was going to do with Ben Kenobi at the end of the movie. He didn't know what to do. And she said, oh, well, maybe you should you know, there should be a death. Maybe you should kill off Kenobi. And that, I mean, that makes the character work so much more.
Oh, yeah.
When you kill him off and then bring him back as sort of a guiding spirit in the other movies.
Right.
Than if he was just hanging out in those other movies. I think it makes Kenobi's character mean so much more.
Yeah, because his whole purpose really was to get Luke going.
Yeah.
Like, that was really...
It should be Luke's journey.
What he's waiting on. It's Luke's journey.
It shouldn't be Obi-Wan's final journey.
Right.
It should be Luke's journey throughout the second trilogy, I guess what they call it now. But
right.
It's really the first trilogy to us.
Yeah.
But, yeah, a lot of her... And she's kind of been erased through all the documentaries and things like that because of their divorce.
Erased.
Yeah.
From existence.
They've erased her from existence as Marshall Lucas. Yeah. And it's not fair because a lot of the things that... And you can tell between... I don't want to go too far off on a tangent here.
That's fine.
But you can tell between the original Star World trilogy and then the prequel Star World trilogy the difference in, you know, a guy, you know, the character choices and the movement of the film and just the heart of those movies. You can see that there was a lot more influence in the original trilogy than it is in the prequel trilogy. And the thing that's changed between those two is Marshall Lucas. She was there to guide him in that first trilogy and as sort of a filter. Whereas on the prequels, I don't think that George really had anybody
stopping
him and saying, that's too much, George.
I think
doesn't work.
I think he basically just did whatever.
Yeah, he just did what everyone and everybody just went, uh-huh, yeah, okay, uh-huh. Yeah, you're George Lucas, we're making a Star World, okay, uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
But she was there to kind of say, this doesn't work. She did it on Raiders, too. At the end of Raiders, the movie was going to end with Indy at the place, and they tell him that it's going to be top men. And then it's just, you know, showing the arc being put into the big warehouse.
Mm.
And Marsha watched it with Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. She said, what happened to Marion?
Right.
And they both just went, oh, yeah, we forgot about Marion.
Oops.
And so they filmed the scene on the street with Marion and Indy. And it gives closure to Marion's character, and it gives, like, a more warm feeling at the end of the movie.
Totally.
It totally works.
Yeah.
You lose that, and the end of the movie totally changes. You're going... Did they just leave Marion on the island, or where's Marion, you know, or wherever she's at, you know? So, without spending too much time on it, Marshall Lucas deserves a ton of credit for how the movies ended up being, because she was a major editor throughout all three movies, and she had a lot of story influence on things that worked and things that didn't work.
Mm.
And it's sad that, through his kind of pettiness, that she's been erased over the years.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Marsha.
Sorry, Marsha. You deserve
Marsha,
more credit.
Marsha.
She's still around, and she's almost like she's gone away. Like after the divorce happened, she didn't get any more work in Hollywood.
Yeah,
it was like a lot of rumor is that he pretty much blackballed her for everybody. Like told major directors and stuff not to work with her and all this different stuff.
Maybe we shouldn't be doing this George Lucas tribute.
George Lucas not that cool of a guy, really.
George.
He had some great ideas. He's a great idea man.
Okay, well, we're talking about ideas. Then.
But let's get back to a Star World.
Back to Star World.
C-3PO and R2-D2. The journey is through their eyes.
Sort of, yeah.
Throughout all six movies, they're the constant, especially R2.
Yeah.
But really, the journey is told through the eyes of the droids, which are the least, you know, I don't know the right word.
They're not the least interesting, but they're the least...
maybe integral or maybe...
relatable.
Bombastic, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know the right word for it.
They're not heroes.
But they're the everyman type of the characters. Yeah. They're just like almost like comic relief or things
they're
like that.
Definitely comic relief.
And I think you borrowed that from Kurosawa films, maybe? I think that's what But it's to do it through the eyes of the characters that are sort of the comic relief characters or the ones that are not really the hero or the villain or anything like that.
Right.
Just these side characters. And you kind of watch the movie through them. Because we see them on the ship, and then we go down, we follow them down to Tatooine, and we follow them here, we follow R2 on the Death Star Trench, and we're with R2 in Hoth Base, and, you know, it's cool. And the fact that one of them, you can't even understand, you know, without his friend there, but at the same time, even through those beeps and boops, you get to realize that, like, what R2's conveying. You can almost, like, understand what R2 says.
Yeah, between him and C-3PO, You do get it.
Yeah.
You get it.
You can hear a sound from R2 and you know, oh, he's frustrated with this, or oh, he's wondering what that is. Even the conversation where they're going back and forth and where 3PO says, no, I don't think he likes you at all. And he goes,
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And you know he's saying, well, do you? You know, and he's like, no, I don't like you either.
Right. It is brilliant. The sound guy.
Ben Burtt. Oh man. Incredible.
It was incredible. And
incredible work. The lightsaber sounds, Darth Vader's breathing,
everything.
All those iconic sounds. You think of other films. I'm sorry, I'm chewing when I'm talking about this. It's fine. You think of other films and iconic just noises?
Yeah.
Other than music, it's tough to think of a lot of films that have an iconic noise. And Star Wars is filled.
Oh, it's filled.
With iconic noises. The minute you hear a lightsaber turn on, you know that's a lightsaber.
Yep.
Or Darth Vader's breathing, or R2's noises, all those things. Going into light speed, or you know, all these different things, you know that noise.
Right.
You know that sound. And I have a hard time thinking of other films where the sound is so, you know, integral to what you're experiencing.
It is hard. And partly because that was so early in the library that he built up, I think, has been used a lot in other movies, you know, any Lucasfilm movie. You can hear that scream. You can hear that scream in like every movie. Anytime somebody falls down, it's in Raiders. It's in I hear it all the time. But yeah, that is awesome. The lightsaber was in itself
incredible,
an incredible invention.
Oh, and it's such a cool weapon.
It's a really really cool weapon.
It's a really really neat weapon.
And to pull it off on camera,
that was a challenge.
Probably a challenge.
Yeah.
And it looks good. Like, it's like from the first movie, it still looks like good. Like,
you think of all like the weapons in like fantasy films or sci-fi films or something like that. And it's really tough to beat a lightsaber. Like, you think about, I love Star Trek, but I would take a lightsaber for a phaser any day of the week.
Any day.
Most people would choose a lightsaber early on as like, oh, what would be your sci-fi weapon of choice? Because you can block stuff with it, you can cut stuff down, it's a sword, it goes back into the hilt, it's just, it's so cool. And each one was, you know, we didn't realize that we were watching Star World as much, but when you get through the other films and you see how iconic each lightsaber is to each character, you know, how
personality.
Luke, you know, has the new green lightsaber in Jedi, and we'll get to that when we get to Jedi, but...
Well, that's something that carries through... like myth. George based a lot of this on old myth and stuff like that. But if you look at the sci-fi and fantasy, you had the space stuff, and you always had laser guns.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you had. You had laser guns and the space stuff. And the fantasy, the medieval fantasy, iconic stories, Lord of the Rings and all that stuff, it was swords. You know? And he found a way to say, okay, we're going to do swords in space, but they're space swords. They're made of light. They're made of lasers, just like your laser guns. It's a Star World.
Yeah.
it's just now. I mean, kids grow up knowing about the lightsaber, and it's just a piece of as if it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not. It doesn't exist, but we treat it as if it's a reality.
Because you get a roll of wrapping paper.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that wrap off when you're a kid.
You know what that is?
That's a lightsaber.
It's a lightsaber.
That's a lightsaber. I mean, everything, it seems like, you've got a flashlight, you've got a lightsaber.
Yep.
You know, and there's not a lot of other, you know, weaponry or whatever in films that could carry that over. I mean, I'm not going to take a rolled-up newspaper or whatever and pretend like it's a machine gun or something like that. But
yes,
it's a lightsaber, you know?
You might, but you didn't want to after you saw Star World.
After Star World, that changed everything. You wanted it to be a lightsaber.
Because it was so cool.
It's just the coolest weapon. It's so cool. Here, we're opening up to the cantina scene here in this book right now. And the cantina scene, you touched on the way it was edited a little bit, but it's so cool. Okay, let's address the special editions real quick.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Now, I grew up, I saw Star Wars when I was young. I was born in 78, which is a year after Star Wars, but I do have a memory of seeing Empire Strikes Back in the drive-in and Star Wars being with it. I can remember snippets of seeing them both together. I especially remember Empire. And then when Jedi came out, they would show the other ones, and I saw the other ones. But I didn't have quite the same memory of seeing Star Wars on a big screen as I did Empire and Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
But then the special editions happened in 97. I'm like, okay, well, now I can see a Star World on a big screen. But we all know that special editions are terrible.
He's taken the cantina scene
and plugged in a bunch of cartoons.
Nobody wants to see that.
Nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see Greedo shooting first.
No, that's a classic. That's a classic mistake that everybody's upset about.
But we have to address it.
I'm upset about all of it, and I don't want this to be a bashing thing.
Yeah.
But you know, I think I've said it on here before. The reason why those movies were such a success is because people love them. People mm-hmm. love the way they are. They love the way they're cut. They love that there's no big crazy cartoon dance number in it.
They want to see it the way they remembered it.
That's right.
And not with a cartoon thrown in the middle. And I tell you, almost all the time, I'll prefer a rubber mask, something that's actually on the set, as to opposed to something that's been put in later on, and it's a cartoon, and it stands out as a cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
I want everything to seem like it was there on the set. We're all just talking. They're all just talking. Either way, we know it's fake.
Yep. Yeah.
We know that the aliens aren't real.
Right.
Okay? So you can either have me in a rubber mask and actually be there interacting, or you can throw a cartoon in there.
Right.
And I really, really know it's not real at that point. I'm totally checking out. And all I'm seeing is the cartoon you've thrown in there.
Right.
And that's the way I felt when I watched the cantina scene, was every once in a while, I'd be like, why did you erase that one alien, like Lax or Vac or something, and put in this cartoon?
Yeah, why would you do that?
Why would you do that?
Carrie Fisher was saying something about being on set there and looking around, and the bar was filled with, you know, giant praying mantis and all these like crazy things, and they were like,
wackiness.
They were like, this isn't going to work.
And it totally works.
But it totally works because of the way it's cut, really.
100%. And then you get introduced to one of the coolest characters, if not the coolest.
He's the coolest.
The coolest character.
He's my favorite in this movie.
Yeah.
In the first Star Wars, which A New Hope, which wasn't called A New Hope when it came out.
It was just Star Wars.
It was just Star Wars.
Yeah.
Han Solo is my favorite.
Without a doubt.
Easily. I mean,
easily.
And if
he may be the coolest movie character.
If it weren't for him.
Yeah.
I don't know that this movie would have been.
And it's so cool that he got the role. He was just a carpenter, and they brought him aside to read lines with the other ones, and he read them better than everybody. Of course he read them than everybody.
Well,
Ford is Han Solo.
He had done
American
Graffiti.
So that made it so he wasn't supposed to be in this.
Right, because George didn't want to keep reusing the same guys. Mm-hmm. He said the same thing when he went to do Indy, and it's just Harrison Ford is. He's Han Solo.
He's Han Solo, he's Indiana Jones. He is those characters.
Separately, too.
Two totally different characters.
To his credit,
yeah.
I do not associate the two.
Me either.
At all.
Me either. You could put them side by side. You could cross them over in a comic, and it wouldn't even.
Yep.
It would be, oh, those are two different characters.
Totally different guys.
Those are two totally different characters.
But Han Solo,
so cool.
So cool.
His intro is so cool.
He's funny, too.
He's great.
It's funny.
He's great. He's so cocky and confident.
Right.
He knows his ship is a piece of junk.
Right.
But he's selling it like it's the greatest thing ever.
That's the thing.
You know?
He knows he's falling short with the princess a little bit, too, you know, but he still.
He knows it.
He's confident about it. He's going to play it up. I love the, this might be my favorite, maybe not my favorite. It gets the biggest laugh out of me when he shoots he's like, oh, everything's fine down here now.
Situation's normal.
Everything's fine down here. How are you?
Yeah, we're all fine here. That was ad-libbed.
Yeah.
At least that's the story,
right.
That he ad-libbed that whole thing.
And,
which is perfect.
It's just, yeah, it is, and I'm sure, I mean...
He's great, and you have that interaction with him and Luke and Obi-Wan at the table, and he's just all confidence, just he's running the table, basically.
Yep. Yep.
And then they leave, and he turns to Chewie, and he's like, wow, 17,000, this could really save our necks. Right. Like, he's like, and then he just lets it go, like, okay,
he's put on the show
to get the thing, and then Greedo shows up, and it's so much cooler, and it's a real disservice to the character what they did in the special editions.
Really,
I don't want to harp on it too much, but it is such a disservice to the character because you get to see a story arc with Han when he shoots first.
Right.
He goes from being this mercenary that'll cut you down if you're coming after
him. He's a pirate.
Yeah.
He
knows what Greedo's there to do,
yeah.
And he's going to make the move first.
Right.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He's going to take out Greedo first. But then you get this character arc where this guy really just cares about himself, his ship, and Chewie.
Right.
To this guy cares about a cause and people and other things too.
Right.
And when you have him just reacting and defending himself to shoot Greedo, then it just becomes he's a teddy bear throughout. And you never get that other edge to the character, the other side, you know, the little bit of darkness for
Han
Solo.
Yeah, because you're coming in like just the beginning of the beginning of his transformation. And it shed some light, on his life at that point and who he was. And so it's important. And I know that was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
100% was intentional.
And to go back and change it because of whatever your current
policies or feelings are.
Yeah, however you
character.
Feel about it is silly.
It's
but,
really very silly.
But Han Solo is great. Luke is not my favorite character in this movie. He's Luke Skywalker, but he's not even really the hero in this movie. I mean,
He
kind of is.
Yeah,
towards
he makes
the
shot at the end, but Han saves the day. If Han's not there to help him on the trench run, he dies.
Luke is sort of like, he's almost like Bilbo in The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
Or he is the main character, but he's not yet undergone the transformation that he needs to.
Yeah.
And Han Solo is more like Aragorn. I can't believe I'm making. I haven't talked about Lord of the Rings in forever, but I'm just. I'm just saying. There's certain mythological.
You really nerded it up.
There's a mythological foundation to this movie, and that's what it's like.
I totally agree.
But Luke in this movie is not. I don't know. I don't relate to him that much, or he's whiny, you know.
But much the same way that we're talking about Han needs that scene with Greedo for you to see his full character arc, you need Luke to be the whiny
absolutely
guy so that when you get to Jedi and he is, yeah. Dude, he's a Jedi now, and you see that change in the character, that's what sells that. Because you've got, had Luke been, and I know you agree and you feel the same way, it helps that if Luke was just like, a cool kind of cool as a cucumber type guy throughout the other movies and confident and all these different things, then when he gets to Jedi and he becomes that Jedi, it wouldn't even matter because he's been like that throughout the other movies.
Right. No, yeah, absolutely.
So you see him build up to that, and I think that's and Mark Hamill sells it, man.
He does. Mark Hamill is not no slouch.
He's definitely no slouch
as an actor.
To see him go from the whiny, you know, kid that's there, oh, I was going to Tosche Station and become power converters and all that stuff. Yeah. Into what he becomes in Jedi, and the fact that they saw that in him, because, I mean, he may not have had the other movies written, but he obviously knew that there was going to be, if there would be more, if it was a success, that he would need these people to make a journey as their characters would go. He would need this guy that's going to be Luke now to also be able to pull off the Luke that was going to be in the future if they made it to these other movies. To see that Mark Hamill and realize that he could do it later on, and that he wasn't just this whiny character, was pretty awesome. It shows, you know, real foresight in the casting.
Yes, agreed.
There you go. Yeah. I'll take a couple turns.
Luke Skywalker. Princess Leia, of course, was a favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the bun hairdo is was iconic at that time.
I think maybe this is my favorite movie of Leia.
Yeah.
I think about her in she's really good in Empire, but it's more her interactions with Han.
Yeah.
That are good in Empire.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if I enjoy her character as much in Jedi.
She gets to be really. She's real feisty. She's got a spark in the.
That's
first
what I
movie.
Like about the first one,
because she's on her own. She's not grown to depend on these other guys, and it's fine that she does. But yeah, she's setting up the character and setting up that she is a princess. But she's a princess who's not going to take any crap.
She takes real risks throughout the movie too. Yeah. She's being tortured by Darth Vader and never gives it up. She's you know, she has her planet threatened, and she still gives him false information.
Right.
She's interacting with Han and Luke and keeping up with them. She's the one that figures out the way out of the garbage scout or the garbage or the detention block into the garbage thing.
Yeah.
And then and all the while, you know, she'd just seen her family and her planet get destroyed, and yet she still is this strong woman character that doesn't seem like she needs any help from anybody else.
That's the thing, though, too. That's funny about it is she is the damsel in distress. She's still she's still filling that role, and she's still in distress. But she's, you know, especially playing opposite of Luke, she's the one who has to grab the gun and you know make the move and kind of inspire them to act.
Yeah.
So it's a different take on the damsel in distress.
Yeah, definitely.
But not over the top. It's not to the point where she's. The femme fatale, you know, like...
I'll take care of it.
Right.
Yeah, it's,
I've got this, and doing, like, ninja moves and karate click kick, flipping over stormtroopers and stuff. So there's a good balance with her, I think.
Let's talk about Chewbacca, since he's on this page.
Chewie.
Chewbacca's awesome. I mean, there's not a lot you can really say about the thing, other than that he's huge.
Yeah.
And he doesn't... You look at this character, and this would just be like a monster-y type character in another film, but he's a competent pilot. He's, you know, there's something else going on with Chewie because, you know, you see Han as this pirate and things like that, and he's got this big furry guy hanging out with him for some reason. It was just such an odd pairing, and you knew right off the bat when you were watching it, I was like, something else is going on there. Like, they had to have, there must be some history involved that these two would be working together, and you could tell that Chewie is kind of noble, and, you know, he's wanting, like, especially in the scene when Han's taking all the money, and you can tell Chewie doesn't want to do that. Like, he wants to stay and help. And, I mean, of course, there's all these other books and everything surrounding it about what why yeah. Chewbacca's there and his race and all that stuff.
I like that it's not touched on.
But you don't need to touch on it. I think that's great. I think you just leave it the way it is, and you just it's understood that that's his best friend, and something has brought those two together,
right?
And they are not going to separate. Like it's
the odd couple.
Yeah, it's more than just a partnership. They're like true friends. Like they count on each other.
Right.
Chewie's awesome.
I love Chewie.
My mom's favorite character because it looks like a dog.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's the thing too. He's like a dog.
Yep.
But he's the big strong guy. He's like the muscle bound sidekick.
Yeah.
That you would carry around. He's a strong arm.
He's a strong dude.
But he's not dumb.
He's not dumb. Yeah.
And he's not you know,
the Falcon
pulling punches. The Falcon is great.
What a cool looking ship, man.
It really is.
It really is a cool looking ship.
And it's unconventional because the cockpit is over to the side.
Yeah. It's a different design. It's
way different.
So many things are different.
A lot of the ships in a Star World are...
And the aerial, like the combat scenes, or not aerial, but the space combat scenes were different too. I obviously was too young when this came out to be able to compare, but looking at films that came before in this kind of film, it really is like an aerial dogfight, like planes fighting each other and things like that in the air, and not so much spaceships fighting.
Right.
It really felt like an aerial dogfight, and they used aerial dogfight actual footage
yeah,
as like a prototype for what they would film, and that's genius. I mean, the two different gunner stations where they're yelling to each other and stuff like that.
And once again,
it's just totally unlike anything else.
The real world stuff put into that context of being in space, and
I'm not trying to dissuade what you. When I say unlike anything else, I mean on film, but I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's like the real world. It's unlike anything else in the space.
Yeah,
film.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. It's unlike anything in fiction. That's what set it apart. Was that he did that he took, you know, the real world and put it in just a different context. That's it. It's not. He wasn't trying to, you know, invent something that was totally different. It was relatable, and we already been over that. This movie also introduced one of the greatest villains of all time.
Oh, no doubt. The Stormtrooper.
That's right.
Yep.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Grand Moff Tarkin's.
One of the most iconic...
Yep.
Nope.
No. Grand Moff Tarkin was awesome, though.
Grand Moff Tarkin is awesome.
He's great. And it's great. Very surprising to me that he didn't have a toy in the vintage line.
I'm surprised by that, too, because they were really...
Yeah.
Like, they were cool. I want to talk about toys before we get... too far. We don't have to do it now, but the greatest World Breaker.
Star World, a World Breaker.
The greatest villain of all time.
World Breaker.
The Dark Lord, World Breaker.
Yep. The Darth Lord of the Sith, World Breaker.
World Breaker.
Yep. he's the villain of a Star World.
Darth Vader.
If you have a world, he's gonna break it.
He's gonna break it apart.
He's the World Breaker.
Darth
he broke Leia's world.
Yeah, he did.
He's the World Breaker.
He literally did.
Yeah. Darth Vader.
Darth Vader. Such a cool design.
Amazing design.
All of the Empire stuff is based on like the German Nazi stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no fan of Nazis.
No, of course not.
But
Nazis. I hate these guys.
Yeah. But I gotta say, they had
it right when it came to fashion.
When it came to all their art design, like everything that had to do with that whole thing was very well marketed. All of their pamphlets and their uniforms and their flags and everything, just perfect bad guy stuff.
Yeah,
like of comic proportions. Obviously, all the Empire's stuff was loosely based on that. But Darth Vader. This is another thing where all of these characters, going back to George Lucas's luck. Could have easily sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very easily, this could have been crap, Darth Vader.
It's like you said, it's luck.
It could have been a joke.
The Ralph McQuarrie design being, you know, eventually filtered into what became Darth Vader.
Right.
The body of David Prowse, that's big, giant, hulking dude. The voice of James Earl Jones.
Yes.
The breathing effect from Ben Burtt. All of it coming together just makes one perfect character.
Right.
You lose one of those elements... And the rest won't work.
And it's flat. Yeah.
It has to be all of them.
I'm thinking of all the ways the costume could have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this way for Predator too. Like Predator was a terrible looking, and the whole thing would have just been crappy. And it was like last minute deal to make that change to the look. And I don't think Darth Vader was a last minute thing, but But the way that it came out is very sellable and it's very believable. It's not...
Yeah. You know that...
It doesn't look fakey. It doesn't look like, oh, this is a science fiction bad guy. It's like, oh, that dude's bad.
Yeah, this is an evil guy.
Yeah, that guy's evil.
The minute he walks out, you know that's the main bad guy. Yeah. That's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And it's so intimidating and imposing, but at the same time, even without seeing, you know, what we saw in Empire, when we see the back of his head, we know that something has happened to him.
Oh, yeah.
Because the breathing and stuff like that, and all the apparatuses and all over him and stuff, that something is bad has happened to him, and he needs this to live, basically.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's the most intimidating thing you've ever seen. Oh, you know, yeah. It's just... He's so imposing, so evil.
He's commanding everybody. Like, yeah. As soon as
everybody's
scared of him. One of the first things he does is lift that dude up by his throat.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
It was awesome.
It was awesome.
And then when he uses the Force on Admiral Mahdi, when Worldbreaker uses the Force on Admiral Mahdi, and he's just he's just so nonchalant. He's just like pinching his fingers. He's like, I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Yeah.
And it's just like it's just nothing to him.
Right.
He's about to kill this guy from across the room. And it's like the smallest movement he has to even do.
This is a point where I agree with Darth Vader. He's got this board of corporate fuddy-duddies basically sitting around trying to figure out the best thing. And he's just old school and is like, you know what?
I'm going to choke you.
You want to say...
you want to say the Force ain't real?
Yeah.
You want to say my Force isn't real?
Right.
My Force? I'm Worldbreaker. you may have heard of me on your Star World. Darth Vader is awesome. The stormtroopers are awesome. What a cool design. And then when you have the main villain all in black and all his warriors all in white, you get this contrast between the two.
Oh,
and it's just
perfect.
It's really, really cool.
Complimenting
looking.
Each other.
The group together looks really cool. How many minutes are we at now?
41.
No, we're not too bad.
All the stormtroopers being in just being guys in actual costume. Really,
much better.
Really makes a difference. I have to say that I appreciate that.
Than clones.
Yes. Yes.
And that's another fallacy of you're going back and changing things.
Right.
They're different heights. They're different. The way they're interacting, like the two where Obi-Wan's sneaking by, you see that new T-16? And he's going back and forth.
Right.
They're just having a chat.
Right.
And then they go back in that, I guess it's the Blu-ray set. Is it? Maybe the Blu-ray set?
No, I didn't.
Where they've put Tamir Morris and Jango Fett's voice. Taking out their voices, and now they all have the same voice. They're all clones.
I don't like that.
That's foolish.
I don't like that. That's not...
I much prefer that these guys have either been taken, or they've enlisted, or something like that, where they're just dudes that have joined the Empire.
Well, compared to Nazi Germany, once again, you know, those guys enlisted.
Yeah.
Because of a very successful and a marketing campaign, you know, to get those guys. I mean, and there have been some fake Empire... Like our military.
Yeah, I've seen those. Yeah,
which are kind of cool. But
well, in the radio dramas, and I want to talk about the radio dramas a little bit. Okay. I love the radio dramas.
I know.
I love the radio dramas, especially Star Wars, because it's so long and you get so much more to the story. And it's not like a lot of the books go crazy and things like that.
Mm.
But it really just kind of fills out the story using some of the scenes that were cut from the film and some of the you know, a little bit of the backstory that leads into the film. And it came out right around not too far from when the movie came out. It has Mark Hamill and it's got, you know, Anthony Daniels and all that stuff. And it was really meant to kind of stretch out the film.
Right.
And you get to hear, like, Luke getting ready to sign up for the Imperial Space Academy. Like, everybody was, you know, if you want to fly in the stars and you want to be a pilot and things like that, you sign up for the Imperial Space Academy, where they then draft them into, you know, star pilots and stuff like that for the Empire. So it's like you hear that Luke is so close to going off and joining.
Right, right.
And, you know, Biggs has already gone off and joining. He has to jump ship to then join the rebellion. And then you don't get to see much Biggs in this movie because it gets mostly cut out. But we hear about Biggs and we see a little bit about Biggs. But you kind of hear where Biggs' journey went from joining the Empire and then having to jump to join the Rebellion and how the Rebellion is kind of small and how it would even be tough to even join the Rebellion. Like, who would you go to and say, hey, you guys know any rebels that can join up
right
or anything like that?
Well, it was just starting at that point. Like, I think the Empire's evil had not begun to show, which is another reason why I don't like the prequels. It just doesn't add up. Like, if all that stuff was going on back then, shouldn't be quite apparent that
these guys are bad.
Really need to be overthrown. But
anyway,
what are we talking about? Oh, you're talking about the radio dramas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to... I have, I should listen to those.
You should listen to them again.
Last time I listened to them, I did not care for them. I was younger.
Yeah.
I was not forgiving.
You were younger. You really need to give them another listen, because they are fantastic, especially Star Wars and Empire. Empire is really good. Jedi is good, but it doesn't have Mark Hamill back as Luke.
Oh, that would be a problem.
And that is a problem.
I could imagine that not translating as well also.
It's much shorter. They cut that one down quite a bit. Yeah. But the guy that plays Han Solo throughout all three, Perry King, actually tried out for Han Solo in the movie. Like, there's, and when you see the different casting things, the casting videos, Perry King is one of the people that tried it for Han Solo. And as I watched him, I'm like, you know what? I love Harrison. And Harrison is Han Solo. But if I couldn't have had him, I would take Perry King. Because his voice is great for Han Solo throughout all the radio dramas. And he actually kind of has the look of Han Solo. It's like, wow, that kind of works. I can see this guy as Han
King.
Solo.
I'm going to look up Perry King as Han Solo. Perry King.
But it was great. Anyway, so back to the Star World. What else do you have to say?
I want to talk about the toys.
Oh, let's talk about the toys. Let's talk about the end of the movie, and we'll talk about the toys.
Yes.
The end of the movie is great. Of course, Chewbacca doesn't get a medal. Everybody always talks about Chewbacca doesn't get a medal. Okay, so Chewbacca doesn't get a medal.
Well, maybe they could only afford so many medals, and they chose to give them to humans.
I love Luke's outfit.
Luke's outfit in this is great.
Luke's ceremonial outfit.
It's so cool.
Because he's ready for adventure.
It's so cool.
Gone is the farm boy clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw him in the X-Wing gear, but everybody was wearing the X-Wing gear.
Right.
Now he's got a special
adventure outfit.
Yeah.
He's got a jacket.
Another thing I'm surprised they didn't make a figure of back in the old line.
Me too.
Was ceremonial Luke.
Me too.
It just seems like he was ready for more adventures.
Right.
If you're a kid and you're getting the Star Wars line before Empire, all you have is Luke and his farm boy, and Luke in his X-Wing outfit.
Yeah, which could have been anybody, really, because it wasn't a very...
It's just like an X-Wing pilot, basically. You can make that wedge. But if you're going to have adventures after the movie to play with your toys, you want Luke in that outfit.
Yeah.
You want him in the ceremonial outfit to continue the adventures.
I wish there...
You're not going to put him back in his farm clothes.
No, you won't.
No.
I wish there had been more of him in that outfit.
I would love to see more of that.
It's so cool looking.
It's a really cool
outfit. Yellow jacket... With the brown pants
and black
everything.
Shirt.
I mean, he's almost... He's edging towards where Han is, you know? And it looks like he's grown up.
Yeah.
Like, with just an outfit change, it looks like he's grown up.
Yep. You can see the next leg of the journey for him.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the toys.
Toys.
We'll close out this episode with the toys.
No other film has done as much for...
It's crazy.
For action figures and merchandising in general as Star Wars has. And George Lucas, once again, lucked out by maintaining his merchandising rights, which the company, Fox, didn't want to have anything to do with anyway.
Nobody knew back then.
Right.
Merchandising didn't mean anything. But he knew. He's like, I'm going
to
sell
this. Which is funny to me, because action figures have been made all through the 60s.
But not so much on movie properties. A lot of television
properties. Yeah, there
was
a lot of television properties, but you're right. Not a whole lot of movies.
Not so much movies, because they thought that movies would be at the Cineplex for a little while and then go away, where a TV series would stay on.
Right.
You'd be able to keep reaping the benefits of repeating viewings of the showings. But he knew, man. He knew that I will sell this movie based on its merchandise.
Yeah.
And man, those original Kenner toys. What an amazing toy line.
Kenner wasn't even interested in the film.
They just wanted something.
They just want to make a space thing.
Yeah.
And
Mego had Battlestar Galactica, I think, or something like that coming out or something.
And Kenner wasn't even ready because of whatever. They just weren't ready. And the movie comes out, and it's huge.
Mattel? Battlestar Galactica?
I think Mattel had Battlestar.
Yeah, there was some other competing toy line. Well, they were talking about that they had some kind of space thing. And then they said, oh, well, we'll do something like that. I can't remember what it was.
Mm.
I can't remember what it was.
I don't either.
Buck Rogers, maybe?
Might have been Buck Rogers.
I can't remember.
Mego had Buck Rogers.
Yeah,
I think.
That might have been it.
But they, this hit me the other day. To sell, they put out the early bird kit. And the movie,
it's crazy.
The movie is so popular that people are willing to shell out the money that they would for four figures or five figures or whatever.
For an envelope.
For an envelope. Saying that you will get these figures, you don't even know what they're going to look like.
No clue. But you had to have the figures.
But people bought them.
Having the peace of mind knowing... Back then, it's crazy to think about. Nowadays, we do mail-ins all the time.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
You know, we pre-order stuff all the time.
Right.
But back then, to expect people to just go, okay, we're going to have this thing. It's a cardboard sheet with some stickers, and you're going to get the figures. You'll be guaranteed. The fact that people were worried back then, and wanted to just have the peace of mind of knowing, okay, I'm going to get the first four figures, and I'm going to get them fast.
They love Star Wars.
I'm going to have it. They love Star Wars so much they're willing to do it.
I was flabbergasted that Kenner was able to pull that off and sell
it. It's crazy.
Those.
It's crazy. That's Kenner, man. Kenner.
And then to have...
With it.
And then to have that be their mainstay for, I mean...
So long.
That built that company. I mean, well, or kept them in...
I want to touch on this really fast. One of my most disappointing things, when we've talked about this multiple times.
I know.
For that toy line. And I love, I mean, I really think that the vintage Kenner toy line of Star Wars is fantastic. The commercials are great. The sculpting got really great by the time Jedi came around.
Yes.
Those figures still hold up.
Yes.
It's an absolute travesty that Darth Vader only had one sculpt for that entire toy line.
And it's the worst.
They were using that same Darth Vader body for the entire toy line.
And it's the worst sculpt of all the figures,
terrible.
I think.
And all the ones that I mean, you're not going to use that same Luke sculpt throughout.
Yeah.
But he gets... The Stormtrooper's a pretty decent sculpt. I can see that coming out again and again.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But the Darth Vader is not
a good
sculpt. It doesn't hold a candle to, say, the Gamorrean Guard sculpt from Return of the Jedi.
Oh, not even close.
Or something like that, whereas it's just like...
Or any of those figures.
Why does this...
It looks totally out of place in the Empire line.
Oh, it looks horrible.
It's
looks totally out of place in the Jedi line.
It's the worst figure of the first wave, I think.
It really is. And
it
still has the push-out lightsaber.
They still kept the push-out lightsaber, even though they switched over to
even though they switched over to people holding them, he still got the push-out throughout.
When I was a kid, I didn't have... I mostly, like, hand-me-down Star Wars, and I don't know where they came from, honestly, because I had a bunch of them. But, I had all that stuff, and so I'd go to my friend's house... And he had a Darth Vader, and he was missing his cape. But I just thought I was like, this is lame.
Yeah.
Who's it supposed to be again?
Yeah.
The ribbing on the pants and everything was just too...
It's so bad.
It's too pronounced.
I mean, when they didn't know it was going to be a big hit.
Right.
And they were just, getting them out, they should get out. That's fine for them.
It's fine, yeah.
But when you give the Bespin Guard two different sculpts...
Yeah.
You can't give Darth Vader a new sculpt.
Yeah,
you can't go ahead and put up the money. What was it, two different Klaatus? I think there's two different Klaatus.
Yeah.
There's two different sculpts for him.
Oh, yeah.
You give him two different sculpts, but you can't give Vader a new figure?
Yep.
Come on.
Two different head sculpts for Han, too.
Yeah.
Two different head sculpts for Han in the first wave.
It's just, I've never understood that.
Yeah.
How Darth Vader got stuck with that same figure throughout the entire line. And they couldn't ever go back. And it wasn't, I mean, in Power of the Force, they were going back and doing figures from Star Wars. They did Luke Stormtrooper in Power of the Force.
Right.
And that's from Star Wars.
Right.
So why couldn't they do another character from Star Wars and redo the Darth Vader that they did for Star Wars or something? I mean, and Darth Vader's a character in Empire and Jedi, and he looks pretty much the same.
He's the main guy. I mean, you got to have a good
that
villain.
Darth Vader. But speaking of the toys and how long it's lasted... I mean, you think about when they came back in 1995.
Yeah.
That line is still going. It has not stopped.
That's true. They've been making Star World ever since.
I mean, the line ended with Power of the Force.
Yeah.
And then it restarted in 1995. And it has not stopped since 1995. That has got to be the longest running consecutive action figure toy line.
Aside from G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe had years where it took off, too, though.
Yeah.
I'd be interested
to compare.
I mean, from 95 until 2013, with no signs of stopping yet.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing the 6-inch figures now, which is a different line.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me, you're doing the Black Series.
I did.
The 6-inch figures.
Yep.
You got them.
I got a good deal on them.
And they're coming out with...
Come on. I found good paint jobs and I got a good deal.
You got a good deal.
Yeah.
So you didn't cave.
I didn't cave, but I caved.
But Hasbro's saying, how can I get Mike to buy a Star World?
We got James buying some Star World.
We got James buying some Star World, secondhand, if any.
Yeah.
How can we get Mike to buy a Star World? I'll tell you how you can do it. 5 points of articulation and $5.99 price point.
It's a good thing.
You're doing it.
It's a good thing, man.
The second wave is not out yet, but that Luke Jedi figure looks like it's going to be...
The Han looks great.
It's the best one. I'm on.
I'm excited about the 5 points.
I am excited about it, too. I feel like a kid.
Yeah.
I feel like a kid again.
It really is like the continuation of the vintage line.
That's what it's like.
I wish these were in the vintage packaging.
It reminds me of being a kid, and you could have, like, you had some birthday money. And you were going to go and you were going to pick out a figure. That's what it reminds me of, even though...
And the $10 two-packs are great, too.
Those are great.
Chewbacca and Han for $10?
That's right.
Great.
I'm going to get them.
It really just... I just said it, but it really just feels like, had they not stopped with Power of the Force,
right,
and had the line continued with the same exact kind of styling so that they all matched the vintage line,
right,
Power of the Force line, 1995 line, Power of the Force 2, is a different thing.
It's a different, thing.
Sculpting, different this, yeah, different, that. But the proportions and the sculpts and stuff like that, they really feel like as if Power of the Force and Return of the Jedi just kept evolving into this.
That's what I like about it. And it's been hard for me to collect Star World up until this point. Because
it's tough for you to buy Star World.
Because everything's been so different. You can never get a full collection.
Oh, it's immense.
Of the same articulation, the same...
Because they constantly upgrade and change and do this and do that.
Trying to upgrade and whatnot.
Another release of the character. Oh, we didn't get it quite right with that one. Here's another one. Oh, but there's something wrong with it on this one, so we'll release it again. That line is so huge.
It's kind of a mess.
You can't get into it. You can't break into that kind of line.
Right. So
that line makes it different.
I like with the Saga Legends, if they're putting in stuff from the prequels in there too, which is fine with me as long as I get vintage trilogy figures. I'm cool with it, whatever, because they're doing it, and it looks like within two waves, they've got everybody looking the same type of articulation and everything.
And I think they'll stick with that.
Just keep it simple, keep going, and you've got something.
Well, I mean, for a long time when the prequels started, I remember reading a lot of forums like, man, I wish I could get prequel characters to mix in with my vintage figures.
Yeah.
This is the line.
This is the way you can do it.
That's the way you can do it. You can grab those Anakins and Maces and stuff like that. You could sit them with your vintage figures... And they will look as if they fit in.
And they're starting over.
Yeah.
Basically with this. And I like that there's really not a chance, I don't think, that you're just going to get another VOTC figure re-released again in this line. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I like that. Because that's another problem. You'd start with a new line and say, oh, this is a new figure. This new Luke is awesome. And then, oh, you want Han Solo? How about we give you this same Han Solo
that we've done a bunch of times.
That we've done like 50 times from that first
VOTC. It's just too much. There's no breaking into it.
Right.
And with the other line, I mean, you have to kind of, and I feel the same way about the 6-inch line as I do the line you're talking about, is that, you know, you've got two groups that you've got to please with these toys. And that's the collectors that have been there since 1995 and have everything.
Right.
And the people that just want to break into the line.
Right.
So you can't please them both with that other modern line, because if they do another Han, all the guys that have been in it for forever will be like, another Han?
Right.
I don't want to buy another Han. But the guys that just want to break into it, they're like, I need a Han. I need a Han. I need a Leia. Right. I want these characters. But so they can't do both. They've got that line has gone so big and gone so long that repeating those characters again is detrimental to the ones that have been in it for forever. So creating both the Black Series of a whole new scale.
Which the packaging looks great, by
the way.
I love it.
And the fact that they made it so you can open it and put it back away is almost like a charity to a lot of collectors, because you don't have to buy two.
Yeah.
To do that as a new scale, okay, here's a new scale. You can get into it if you want. If not, you don't have to. But this way we can start again. We can do the same character, these characters again that people want,
right,
but do it in a way that if you're new to collecting, you can get something new. If you're old to collecting, you can get something new. And the same with the 5 points of articulation line. It makes it accessible to everybody.
Right.
And if you don't, if you don't want to collect it, don't collect it. If you've been in it for forever, your line is still going.
I feel like you can afford to cherry pick too, because you're not spending $10 on a figure for one. And there's something about them. The lightness of them, the smallness of the packaging. It could be a throwaway thing, whatever. I feel like buying a Star Wars figure today. And I would just go and do it, and that's it. And I would enjoy it, and that would be it. It's not like a commitment. It's not like, oh, I'm trying to, like...
I think we're going to have to wrap this up soon. Yeah, we're going forever. But the Black Series, okay, is more geared to an adult collector.
Yes.
And the thing we've said for a long time is that toys are kind of losing their way because it seems like they're just making toys for collectors.
Right.
And the thing that made toys so great when we were kids is that they were made for kids.
For kids, yep.
And I think that's what you're seeing with, like, some of these lines... When they take it back to 5 points, make them cheaper and stuff, they're making toys for kids.
Right.
And that
more
is
more durable
what,
that way.
Yeah, and it's what we glommed onto as kids and what we grew up with and what we enjoyed and stuff like that. And they got away from making toys for kids and making things, that people play with and use imagination to do all those things. And it was all about collectors. Here's this, collector. Sometimes those kid lines end up being the ones that have the legs and the ones you really want to collect and get into and stuff like that. And so I think it's cool they're doing that.
It's really cool.
Making a toy line for kids again for Star Wars.
It's got me excited about about buying a Star World toy.
There you go, man.
Well,
that's a good long episode.
It's a long episode, but there's more.
There's more to come. We may not do another one immediately.
No, these are probably going to be spread out.
Yeah,
but
we
may do another
one in a row. Who knows?
Who knows? We're gonna alternate.
What happens?
We're gonna alternate
in the next couple weeks.
We're gonna do the next one's gonna be Raiders.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then we'll go back to a Star World after that. So,
Empire Strikes Back.
It's been fun, everybody. May the Force be with you.
Do we have any sponsors for this episode, or?
He's gonna burn me down.
I can't believe you forgot about our sponsors.
Forgot all about them.
You forgot about our sponsors.
I'm in trouble now.
Oh, well. Great. You're going to hear about it.
I'm going to hear about this.
You're going to hear about it.
Well, if I'm not here next time, folks,
you know why.
You know why.
We're going to have to run a print ad on the website because of this.
That's what we're going to have to do.
We're going to have to make up for it.
All right.
All right.
May the Force be with you.
And all that other stuff.